So this evening, I'd like to explore with you what might be happening to you in this one day. And what happened to me in this one day, in the morning, I was running, Siti Ritsa. Jogging 1 hour with Maya. And Maya told me, well, some people ask, how is it a 75-year-old person can run round the kibbutz a few times? And I thought it's a good place to start, because the usual mind says, if I go to cheder kosher, if I am fit, if I know to train my body, then of course, at the age of 75, I can run. But that's not a Dharma view. Because the Dharma view will say, that it a 75-year-old body can run if it doesn't build stories that stop it. That's different. It's not building a story called I can. You say positive psychology. It's good to have goals and to extend every time a little bit more and so on. But that's in, I would say, regular psychology, and it's fine, it's not a problem, but the Dharma goes to another place, which is, if you don't have a narrative that a 75-year-old person is running, but there's just running happening, then you can run. It doesn't matter what age, it's just a story. There isn't a 75-year-old person running, it's just running happening. And when that happens, you will run. It's okay, or you will dance, or you will fly, or you will relax. So it's taking away the pressure to be somebody, or to get better, or to fix something, which is the difference between a, I would say, regular mind, which is not wrong. The Dharma isn't against that. The Dharma has in it as well. It's good to sit a little bit longer, maybe push the boundary a bit. It's not a problem. But it goes further into really understanding and letting go of narratives, stories, descriptions, resistance, or labels that might stop a process of being free. It goes further. And that may help you understand what it is we're doing here, and some of the questions in the groups. How do I practice better? Yeah, we can give advice, suggestions, how the body posture, it's fine. But there's one more place to go, which is not to push to get there, but to let go and be how we are in this moment, and that's the basis. So we're born in a body, mitgalmim beguf. It just happened. We don't know why we got a body. I wish someone would tell me. And then all our life we spend busy trying to get it better, so that we don't get viruses, we don't get the chisunim against the viruses, or we are healthy, we are successful, or defending ourselves against threats, challenge, elbon even, and we work to protect this body. But at the same time, the body is a source of truth. Satya Dharma, the Dharma of truth, the truth that the Dharma can bring, we can see it in the body. The body is not a kind of problem, and we only see the truth in spiritual sky perfection, and we have to drag the body with its pains and viruses and so on, and it's a problem. This is a very, very deep, ancient problem. Duality affected the Buddha just as much. For 7 years, he was starving the body. The texts are amazing if you read them. That if he stood up to do pee-pee, he fell over because he had no power. He didn't eat really for just one grain of rice and intense meditation. And starving himself and punishing himself. And he paid for it in his life, by the way, because he had quite a lot of health problems after that. And a lot of yogis, when I was hanging around with the yogis next to the Ganga in 1975-76, they were super punishing themselves. If I punish my body, then there's more chance that my spirit will be free. And it's not only the yogi tradition, it's Christian tradition. Why did they burn 9 million witches? 9 million women, mostly old women, got burnt by the church in the medieval times. And they said, it's good for you, because we burn the body, but your spirit will go to heaven. It's a crazy... where it goes, this ignorance of the body and the spirit being two things fighting each other. So there's a really nice story in the text. The Buddha was visited by a kind of little god, a spirit. You can say little god, angel, okay? And the Buddha talked to this angel, and the angel said, I died while on my spiritual search. Chipus ruchani, I died on the way. Because I was searching and walking and walking and walking and looking for the end of suffering. And looking for liberation. And I walked across India from one side to the next, one side to the next, and I died on the journey. And the Buddha said something so beautiful, and it kind of brings tears to my eyes when I think of this story again and again. The Buddha said, you're looking in the wrong place. You can't walk your way to freedom. The place for freedom is in this 2-meter-long body. There is the world, there is the world you make, there is the suffering that you experience, and there is the liberation. It cannot be anywhere else. It's in this 2-meter-long body we will see the whole thing. So, this is what we're doing. Kaya upasana, meaning vipassana with the body. Kaya is body. All the other aspects of the human being are still there. We're not making the same mistake and saying, just body, 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 and the mind, I fight it. Or the heart is bad, because it gives me anxiety, daga. No, the body is one tahana, or place to pay attention to, and the heart, and the mind, and the consciousness, and the spirit, it's all there as part of the practice. But there is a wisdom in saying, let's start with something simple. Let's start in the most simple place, which is, I breathe, I sit, I know I exist. How do I know I exist? Because I know my body is sitting here. And if we keep, one of our problems is that we keep somehow intuitively having these splits between what the consciousness and the body, the heart, and in many societies there isn't this split. The mind and the heart work together, and the belly is the place that knows it all. If you want to have an answer to your deepest questions, go to the tummy. It will tell you. And it's actually created big cultural issues that we don't even know that how deep they are in the, I won't go into this, but in the philosophy that our life is based on in the community, science based on materials, not on consciousness. We need to fix the body through, like I said, a medicine, a chomer, a chisun, but it's not the mind that can help. Mind is not relevant. So it's very, you know, a very deep cultural result of this, of mind, of Descartes, mind and body, bodies, science and the mind. We look at it, but it can't help us overcome corona. So what we're doing is giving more space to the body. We're listening to the body, and this is really, really important. And when we do that, we will discover the mind. And just see the way, for example, our mind restless a bit, confused, or feeling uncertain, unstable. And we go to the tummy, and we feel this quiet confidence of the tummy, the center of our weight, the center of our body. Tantien in Chinese or Eastern language, center of power. And it goes up and it goes down with the breath, it goes up and it goes down with the breath. And without really trying to calm down, we find ourselves calmer and collected. And we don't know how it happened, because it's the tummy and the body that guided us to another place in the mind. And the opposite happens. We feel fear or uncertainty and contraction and so on. And the mind says, oh, there's problems. And then it makes the body more afraid. And there's loops going on all the time, which take us in all kinds of directions. But we can get a sense that if the heart and the mind and the belly work together and talk together, and we bring them together, there's huge power in that to change our life and to help others. Just think of the power of compassionate action in the world. Just think of people who are in a way leaders that have this power. Many examples. Nelson Mandela, I don't know, lots of examples. You'll find the Dalai Lama, you'll find that they're the heart and the mind and the spirit are talking in the way together. There is a connection. They're all together. And the tummy. And so if we collect ourselves, and that's also what we're doing now. We're listening to the heart, we're listening to feelings, they come up, it's okay. We're listening to the body, we're listening to the mind. The mind is in the body. We know the body because of the mind. So the mind and the body are one. We wouldn't know this hand if the mind wasn't there. We practiced it while walking. I was talking about the mind in the legs. This is not poetic language. The legs know what they're doing. We cut ourselves off from the body, and we only know a breath when we go to an indoor retreat and get told, do you know you're breathing right now? And oh, that's interesting. Now, how many breaths do we breathe in the day that we don't know? Or how many steps do we make in the day that we don't know? Or how many times we touch something in the day and we don't know? So it's really, we're coming back, and that's why the word coming home is so relevant here. We're coming home to what's already there, only we didn't notice. It's not that we have to invent a kind of a practice of discovering landscapes, discovering America again. We just need to come back home to where we already were, but we forgot. We forgot that we have a head, unless you have a headache. And then we take Akamol so we can forget it again. So what's missing in the disconnection between us, between mind and body, between distance we have from ourselves, is this mindful awareness of what it's like to be in a body. And we're doing it here without pressure, because then we're back in the same story again of trying to fix everything. But we're doing it with curiosity, with interest, and with love. And that's the way that the whole, that we rediscover ourselves again, that we just forgot. A lot of what we're doing is under the radar, tachat haradar. What is touch like? What's it like for these two fingers to touch each other? That's under the radar. We're looking at things more subtly, which is why it's important, for example, to explore what happens in one step. When we take one step. I once had a retreat in Neve Shalom many years ago with 60 scientists, professors involved in brain research. And it was a few days. And most of them really, really enjoyed the walking, because they could actually experience what they were studying in books and in the laboratory and so on. They could actually experience in real time. But they said, it's very weird. We are walking like zombies here. They said it was very weird. And it can feel very weird. But if we understand why we're doing it, it's no longer weird. We're doing it in order to go under the radar. What's their voices? Kol Dmama Daka. What's the voices that we're not listening to in our usual life? And if we go there, we begin to understand from a more wise place, why am I under stress? Where is this fear coming from? Where is this anger coming from? Where is this disease coming from? What's the body telling me? Where is this symptom? I've got a headache. Where does that come from? We might not have an answer, but we can give the invitation that not say the only thing available is Akamol. No, there are other places. We may decide on Akamol. It's really fine. We're not fighting battles here that this is wrong and this is right. But we need more tools to live. The Buddha also had a doctor. Gave him Akamol. Okay. Have back pain. We can do something about it. But we need to listen to the back, and it will tell us more than just Back pain, medicine. Fix me. Go to the Kupat Holim. Fix me. And there's so many stories in us. There's so many stories in our body. It's telling us our life. Telling us our tendency, nitiyot, our history. And something about that truth, even if it's sometimes difficult for us to open that box. And sometimes we say, no, I'd rather keep it shut. I don't want to know what my body is telling. I just leave it alone. I don't want to be there. But generally, we do benefit from opening the box. And closer to the truth of things really helps us. And an extreme example of this is many, many times we've had retreats and the teachers have been engaged in one-to-one dialogues and helping people that, for example, have a very serious disease like cancer. And right now I'm in a dialogue with somebody that has cancer. And generally they say, I need the truth of things. Then I can begin to have a new relationship. I won't be all right. Maybe I won't survive so long. But the truth, I need to open the truth, not to cover it over and hide away. It's more pain to kind of pretend and cover it and run away from it and have people tell me nice things. It's, I don't know how to put it, to change the color. The truth frees us. And it's something the Buddha said again and again. The truth frees us, not our wishes to be free or our need to be free. The truth frees us. Why? Because then that's a starting point. We get back our power. We get back our life and say, okay, that's the situation. Now I'm ready. Just like... Leonard Cohen, the song he sang a couple of weeks before he died. He knew he was dying, and his song was Hineni. It's not cover it over, pretend it doesn't exist. So that's extreme example, as a Dugma Marsh Kitsoni. But it really helps us, because when we open the truth of things, we discover a real understanding that helps us to dance with difficulty. We see the way things move and change. We can see that our body is stressed and in pain, and we're sitting here struggling, and then the lunch bell rings. Our body is fine instantly. How did that happen? It happened because everything moves and changes. Nothing is really fixed. And that's a discovery. That when we discover that things are dynamic and flowing, the experiences, mind, body is like a sea. It's flowing one to another, and it's not stuck. It's a process. Pain is a process. I was just invited last week to go to a talk, to give a talk to doctors that deal with pain in their conference of neurologists, neurologium. It's not an easy thing to talk about to scientists or doctors, but there is a space, once we begin to look at this space, that there is pain, but then there is what we do with the pain. And where we take the pain and how we look at it fresh. And how it's an experience and not a disaster. It opens up a lot more possibilities. I can't say what I'm saying to you, I can't say to the doctors. I have to find another language. Okay. Unless we have a retreat for them. but we can allow that we have more sense of non-resistance, non-fighting, allow the pain to be painful and the joy to be joyful. And that place is quite liberating because we find ourselves able to hold both the pain and the joy. Allowing pain and knowing it, being with it, seeing its nature, seeing what it's telling us, allowing that's the same as allowing the joy. What's the joy telling us? The back may be hurting, but are the hands hurting? No. So the hands are saying, we're happy, and the back is saying, I'm not happy. But that's all part of life, so it helps us to have a bigger sense of our truth of things, of our experience. I won't go into it now, but what tends to work against this truth of going under the surface is the tendency, nitya, the tendency always to make a kind of summary of how are things for me. So we make a kind of sikkum. This is good for me. I'm sure we're all doing it in this retreat. This retreat is, oh, my back's hurting. This is a terrible retreat. It doesn't work for me. I need something else. I better go to the Tibetans. And then 2 hours later, wow, this is great. We tend to do that in our life all the time. And that's, in a way, the labels I was talking about. If those labels, with those labels or conclusions or sikkumim, summary of how I am in the world, I wouldn't be able to run an hour in the morning. Impossible, I would say. This is the labels we have are instead of, in a way, the intimacy. So we just need to watch that because it's part of our experience all the time to look for sikkumim, summary. Good for me, not so good for me. Good for me, better for me. It's human. I'm sure the ants, right, walking along the path are saying, it's good for me, I'm getting there. Oh, it's very far. Oh, someone's stepped on me right now. I'll never get there. It's in life. We don't blame ourselves for that. It's what got us kicked out of the Gan Eden, the tree, Eds of the Tovli Rali. It got us kicked out of there. We can keep meeting that place, which is the place of the me, that is measuring things. Good for me? No, not. Succeeded, failed. Did it, didn't manage. Pleasant, unpleasant. That's happening all the time in background. Slowly, 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 without fighting it, we can be in another place. And that's mindfulness. Mindfulness helps us to be intimate with what is really happening right now, including being intimate with that voice in us that says, Tovli Rali, because it's part of the picture. It's the self, Ani, it's the me. Part of the picture, we don't want to shut it down, but we can put it in proportion so that gradually in the practice, and if you're asking where this practice is going, gradually we open more space of the lived experience. And then those voices of good for me, not good for me, just take less space. They're just less relevant to us. They're less important. And what's important is our direct meeting with the lived moment. We open that more and more and more gradually. The senses do it for us. And why are the senses, hushim, the senses do it? Is because they are doorways into the direct experience. We can't breathe yesterday. This breath can only be now. The sound of the motorbike that we heard just now, the sound of the cough of somebody, is now. The sound of the dogs is now. The feeling of our body sitting here is now. And it's not just that there's something kadosh, sacred about the now, it's that the now is where we live, so when we want to remember the experience of really living, fully living, that's the place we can experience it. We can't experience it yesterday or in the future. And then what happens is that when we experience through the senses the now, it begins to get bigger and bigger. We find ourselves connected. We feel the trees, we connect to the earth, we connect to our bodies, because it's all happening in the now, but we forgot it. We forgot it because we're in the loop of saying, this is better, I need this, I don't need that. So it's a world of sensory meeting with life, taking our part of life, being part of life, which include the trees and the body and each other and the ants and the night sky. And we can go, that's where it takes us. And when we do that, we actually begin to find that our body is different. It behaves differently. And I'm saying this now from many years of both practice in the Dharma, but also interest in medicine, in health. It's my profession. And I see the way, I mean, in the 60s, we were talking about the way meditation supports the immune system, with hundreds of scientific papers and so on, how meditation reduces the stress and the pressure and opens the blood vessels and blah blah blah. Never mind that now, but the body is different when we engage, when we give it listening, attention, respect, love. Then the body benefits. And we can find ourselves, for example, standing our ground in a difficult situation. We connect with our body, or we take two breaths, and this moment of stress or anger or pressure becomes less dominant. It doesn't take over the whole person. We stand our ground. It says in English, stand your ground. It has in it standing and it has in it ground. It means take your place. And we find ourselves less disturbed by the waves of change, of challenge. Everything. What people say, what people think about us. And there's one other thing that is kind of really interesting that grows in us through this awareness of the body and all that happening in the body, and the body-mind, and the body-mind-heart, which is that we begin to take things less personally. Because we're more connected with the life process and less with our interpretation, how we see it and what we need. When we get closer to the truth, I think that's why those people that I mentioned that with serious diseases often really appreciate the truth, even though it's not necessarily a truth that they are going to be better. But something allows, they don't have to take it personally on the shoulders. It's a bigger picture. We carry so much, and we blame ourselves for so much, and we feel such victim of things that are happening, and we forgot that it's, we made that story of being a victim by the self that says, I am like this. The body doesn't say that. The breath doesn't say that. Even the pure consciousness doesn't say that. The heart doesn't have a whole story called I am. The heart is just a feeling. Fear, anger, love, care. So it's just worth knowing that there is a movement there that's very, very important. That we begin to take things more lightly. And that is where kaya upasana, vipassana with the body, or vipassana with the mind, or vipassana with the heart, we experience a lot less struggle of me and the world. There's conditions that arise. Yes, I'm not in charge. The conditions will arise that are comfortable or uncomfortable. We see them. Relationships happen. We're in relationship with a bigger world. It's not just us. It's also all of us here. It's the trees, it's the land, it's the community. It's much bigger than just me on my shoulders. And we find ourselves able to dance with the change of things, even if they're not so pleasant. But when we're less busy with this lens, adasha, of me as the dominant narrative, then we basically join the dance. Everything is dancing. The body is cells, ta'im, the body is dancing, the wind on the cheeks. It's passing, it's moving. And it's interesting that on a deeper level, when we look at the body, we're also seeing something about the universe. The body isn't just a sort of object which belongs to me and I have to fix it. It's actually a window to the universe. And there's some beautiful poetry, I won't go into it, but there's some beautiful poetry that talks, for example, T.S. Eliot says, how the blood flows through the veins and the channels is exactly the same as how the stars move through the sky, or how the light is shining on the leaves of a tree. In other words, we don't need to feel that we are here and the rest of the world is there. But when we connect with life, our life, we actually connect with all life. And there is there a movement to liberation. So it just helps you to understand this is not a technical thing that we're doing. It seems like rather small. Oh, breathe. Oh, I didn't find any breath. I only could be with two breaths. Okay. But the hands are saying something, the tummy was saying something, the back is saying something, the ears are hearing sound. That's a starting point. That's fine. Stay with that. And I'm just giving you a sense of where it's all going. We rejoin the world again. And the body is our window for that, or one of the windows. And when we do that, we will also know how to care for this world, which is not at all easy. And we may feel quite helpless. But when we know our connection, when we feel that connection through our window of the body to life, with loving awareness, caring awareness, we'll be able to care for ourselves and also for others. And it's tough times right now, and we are needed. Thank you. So we'll take a couple of minutes of quiet.